Hey there, you're listening to the Coffee and Technology Podcast brought to you by Cropster. In this episode, we speak with Matthew Torres. Matthew is the founder of Long Beach Coffee Club, a coffee community based in and around the Long Beach, Los Angeles urban area. Matthew's social media growth in the local coffee community has grown substantially, and we discuss what that means to him and what kind of responsibility that holds for himself. We also discuss ways to continue connecting consumers with the rest of the supply chain. Enjoy.
Yo, Norbert, what's up, man? How are you?
Yeah, excellent. Thank you. I'm super excited to be here and very, very excited and happy to have our next guest here.
Yes, Matthew Torres of Long Beach Coffee Club. Welcome to the podcast, man. You're you're a local legend in the coffee community in LA, and I'm stoked to finally do this with you. How are you?
Well, thank you. Very nice to meet you guys for the second time. And it's great to be here. I'm doing well. It's Friday. It's a beautiful day out in Southern California. So stoked to like have a conversation with you guys and can't wait to dig in.
Sweet, sweet. No, we're just as excited. Just to kind of get going, if you could tell us a little bit about what you do with Long Beach Coffee Club. What is Long Beach Coffee Club? How that got started? I would love to hear more about that.
Yeah, for sure. So it got started, probably the good place to start is like how I started getting into coffee. And I'll start there briefly. And it started with like one coffee shop that I was really nervous to go into. I passed by it a few times and got the courage to go inside, and like everyone was really, really cool inside. And I didn't know what to order. There's a bunch of like foreign words on the menu. And I asked the barista, like, hey, it's my first time in here. Like, I feel really weird, but like, I don't know what to order. And he was really nice. And he was just like, try the cold brew, take a few home. They're really great. So that was like my catalyst and my starting point. And then from there, had a wonderful experience, like just tasting coffee that before that it was always just like adding things to coffee. And then before that it was energy drinks. So I wanted to learn more. I was always like picking the brains of baristas, but they were really busy being baristas and doing a million things. So our conversations always got interrupted with like them doing their job and me just like wanting to talk about coffee. So I created this community and then evolved into what it is today, but it started as just wanting to gather via a platform called Meetup, about, you know, just nerding out about coffee and just talking about coffee, and like everyone was invited. And then from there, it kind of turned into like a platform, and then we started doing partnerships, and the pandemic happened. We couldn't do any kind of workshops. So it kind of shifted to doing some like Instagram lives, but it really, the like nucleus is like consumer coffee education and community. And then through that, it like kind of birthed and went a lot of different directions.
Yes, it's amazing. That's very, very cool. It's, I think, one of the first times here at our podcast to have someone who comes like from the consumer sector of the industry. So I'm very, very intrigued. I want to hear a little bit more about that. How do you find the people who come to those events? How do you connect? Also a little bit about the who are the thought leaders maybe, and how do you deal with controversial topics? Because not everything is black and white, as we know, not in coffee, not in the world. So how do you give space to different ideas? I don't know. So many questions.
Yeah, a lot of layers. All good. I'll try to remember it. I've been a big fan of Harry Mack, that like freestyles on like a YouTube channel, and like people will give him a bunch of words and he'll have to like memorize them. And it's a total tangent, but I would say so we find people through Meetup, which is like the platform. So Meetup essentially is like a place where like it's pretty popular in the US. It is global, but it, like if you want to find runners and have a running group or a cyclist or whatever. You find your little kind of tribe. So I thought, you know, like before I launched Long Beach Coffee Club on Meetup, I looked at Meetup and saw there was a coffee, tea, and whiskey group. And it had like thousands of people. So I thought, you know, if 25 people love coffee so much that they can branch out to just join a coffee club, like I would be stoked because I just wanted to talk to other people about coffee. And that's where it started. And like the very, very first like handful of meetups in like workshops were very boring. Like I thought they were the dopest thing in the world, but they were centered around like coffee history. And I thought in my head back in, what was that, like 2016, that, you know, we should start with the history of coffee. And, you know, we got like people there and then people stopped showing up after that because it was so dry. And it was at night and you don't really drink coffee at night. So it was just like all bad, but I learned and I brought like thought leaders, like baristas and like people that I met in the coffee industry. And I was just like, hey, can you teach us something? And then it evolved to, you know, me meeting somebody at Blue Bottle. And then they're like, hey, we do these like roaster tours and then you can cup. And I was like, I don't know what cupping is, but I like pours. So let's do that. And then they like taught us where like we were very novice and they're very approachable. And it was just like a lot of personal relationships after that. And me starting to like branch out and go to these like coffee events, like latte art competitions, and like Spredge had like a party that I found out about that I showed up to. Nice. And it was very like fish out of water, but it was a lot of like putting myself out there and going, hey, like I'm not one of you guys, but like I feel like the conduit and the same love of coffee is there. I'm just like on the other side. And then they accepted me after like probably lots of like seeing me around. And and then from there, you know, the group grew. I think at the peak it got to like over 700 people, and it's like very localized. So if someone's listening to this and doesn't know where Long Beach is, it's in a bigger city, and you probably know the city, Los Angeles, and Long Beach is, you know, maybe a million people in Long Beach, which is large at scale, but you know, it's like a drop in the bucket compared to Los Angeles County. But people were coming from very far away, you know, driving 2 to 3 hours because there really wasn't anything that was targeting the consumer. Mm-hmm. And the consumer wanted to learn. And yeah, that's how it kind of grew over time.
So, okay. So I follow you on Instagram, obviously, and I see some of your travel sometimes, and I'm curious to know what your, so I've seen you visited farms, coffee farms in Hawaii, and I've gone quite a bit. And I'm curious to know what your experience is like visiting those farms as a consumer, someone who just has a passion for coffee, someone who likes to drink coffee and just talk about coffee, what that's like, you know, because our experience as an industry visiting farms is, I would argue, a different kind of experience. You know, we're there for different reasons. And I've never met a consumer who actually like as passionately visited a coffee farm in the way you have. So what's it like, you know, as a consumer, what is that feeling kind of like? And it's kind of a strange question, but.
No, it's a super like intentional question. And I think it's an interesting perspective because like, I don't think I've ever spoken about it, but my wife is probably very tired of me like going to coffee farms, but I'll like travel and it's either a coffee farm or coffee shops. And she's like, okay, I get it. Like you have your list, you go do your thing. But I'll get to the Hawaii one, which is a bit different because there are more tours. And like, I think Hawaii has it pretty nailed down in the tourism part. So like they're used to customers coming in, but the first like origin trip I took, and I went to Costa Rica for a coffee farm, was in Costa Rica. It was a coffee farm called Don Eli. And I was just talking to different people at coffee shops. And then somebody gave me like their Facebook. Mm-hmm. And I went to like their Facebook page and I was just like, hey, I would love to come visit. And they were like, yeah, come over. You can like rent our farm room and we'll show you the farm for a few days. So my whole trip was centered around that. But then I like flew into a big city, hung out there, went to coffee shops, like local eats, and then like went down to the coffee farm. And I remember Carlos was really confused because like he kept asking me what I did. And I was just like, hey, like this is like the group I have. And like the whole time I was there, he was like really gracious. I was there with another young lady that was a Norwegian student that was like doing a thesis in like a master's. So she was writing about like organic coffee or something like that. So like in the middle of that trip, he's like showing me this the farm and the different farms he has and taking me to like where they process the coffee. It was off season, so like they weren't doing the processing or picking yet, but he kind of like walked through everything. And like towards the middle, he was just like, okay, got it. You can bring your people down here and then I'll give them tours. And then that's how we can make this work. Because he was always like selling coffee. So he was like trying to figure out a business use case for like why like we would work mm-hmm. together. And I was just there because like A, I wanted to see Origin. B, I was just really wanting, I've never been to Central America at that time. And I was just like, oh my goodness, like I want to connect the dots because like I'm so into something that like has nothing to do with my profession. And then like lastly, like having home cooked meals and like all of this, and it's like all inclusive. Like I think there's like some kind of business or tourism thing there, but I wasn't interested. And I was just like, yeah, that sounds great, Carlos, let me know. And but he was still very confused. But then like fast forward like a couple years after that, we still kept in contact. I would always try to like post his stuff so like people would buy his coffee. And then I at that like later years, like his daughter went to go work for like Nordic Approach. And then like it started to make sense. And like, he was just like, okay, I get it. You're like this like crazy coffee consumer. And like, it's cool. And he would like hit me up when he would come to Southern California. He was at like Bodhi Leaf, which is a local importer. And we would meet up. But I think overall it was mostly from the farmer standpoint, if they're not used to doing tours for like, you know, consumers, it's a bit confusing.
Very interesting. In general, I think in many industries, it's very hard for consumers to get into the real ambient of how it's produced and how it's made and where it comes from. You either go to, you know, the like Hollywood, Disneylandish operations, mm-hmm. which are okay, so, and there's a few good ones out there, but it's not real, or it is a little bit removed from reality. Or you do what you did, you just show up and say, like, I want to be here. Super cool. Mm-hmm. Yeah, amazing. So I wanted to come back a little bit to maybe my other question. Well, actually, first to the beginnings, because it stuck with me. And I know that from our first call we had, that you had this intimidation of going into a coffee shop. Mm. And to me, that only happens when I go into a big city in this big, super expensive shopping mall, and I walk by one of those big brands, and I know the way I'm dressed, the way I'm shopping, this is not for me. So I don't go in, right? And they don't want me there either. But the coffee shops, I think they want you there. So what can we learn from this? And did anything change? Do you think the coffee shops look different now? Or what? I don't know. What can we bring to the people?
Yeah, that's a great question. So I think my intimidation was like this coffee shop specifically in Long Beach was like most of the people there were like punk rock or like artists. And like I'm neither of those. Like, I can appreciate like punk rock, like, you know, F the Man, all that stuff. But like, I'm not within that culture. So that was the first thing. And then like, I would peek inside and it just looked foreign to me. I didn't understand like the aesthetic. And then as I got closer, the intimidation like rose drastically because I didn't know how to navigate the menu. Mm-hmm. So I was like an oh crap moment. Mm-hmm. And I think like if the barista at the register wasn't as friendly, I would have probably have never went down this rabbit hole. And I would say that was the number one thing. Like probably, you know, your strip mall example or, you know, my example, those might be like internal things that like we're trying to overcome sometimes. But I think the catalyst or like the big thing is, you know, the hospitality is where I will always use this like saying that like, you know, great coffee, I'll probably come back, but like amazing customer service, I will always like, I'll be a lifetime customer. Yeah. Because like, if you're kind to me, you say hi, you ask me like, just like, you know, like 20 seconds of dialogue, like I am all in. So that's what like, was the big moment where I was just like, okay. And then like, everything, like my shoulders went at ease. I was just like in a better space. And then I got more comfortable and I could ask questions about like, what's a cortado or like a cappuccino? What's the difference in a latte? All of those things where I didn't know how to navigate it. And then just like the, how to describe like a pour over to someone that has only seen like coffee and like a coffee machine was really fascinating to me. Like I went in right before they closed and I still remember his name is mm-hmm. Kyle. I was just like, hey, like I saved my budget and like I can buy all of these things. So I really want to make the pour overs you make here at home. And he like spent time with me and he left me with like the best wisdom that was great for me. Like he gave me all this stuff, like the ratios, and he was just like, just have fun. Like at the end of the day, like if you're really like nervous about it, or you know, this is like you feel like you're doing too much, like remember, like just have fun and you'll be fine. And then that helped because like I'm like, okay, I got to do like science experiments. I have to do like the, you know, like Lance Hendricks level of like dialing in and all of that. And really like, I probably would have gave mm-hmm. up if it wasn't like those, you know, that nice person in that first time I went into the coffee shop. And then, you know, the person just like giving me, you know, the rough foundations of like how to make a coffee at home, but making sure you're having fun with it. So I think it's evolved now. Most coffee shops are a bit more approachable. I think it's more rare that I'll go into a place and they're just like, what do you want kind of thing, but they're still out there. I think the thing that bothers me the most is like new coffee shops that I've never went to. Like if someone's friend's there and they're just having a conversation and they don't like even acknowledge me and I'm like there for a few minutes, I think that's the frustrating thing. I'm like, I get it. Like your friend's here, but just like put it on pause, go help a customer. But other than that, I think I'm getting old now. Like I'm just like, I'm giving you money. Like,
yeah. No, it's yeah, really so, interesting you yeah. say it though, because you know that's always been a, I would say, a long-standing critique of the specialty sector of coffee is the approachability, the that kind of culture. And I definitely do agree that like even when I got into coffee versus now, I think it's changed so much for the better. And I think there's still a lot of work to do. But I mean, what do you think? Like, how do we keep continuing that? Like, what do consumers need to continue that kind of like feel like it's approachable to go into a coffee shop to ask us questions, to want to get into specialty more? I mean you have a very interesting balance between like speaking to businesses on coffee breaks and always being around consumers. What is it that those coffee businesses should continue to do from what you're hearing from the consumer side or experiencing the consumer side, to continue to make specialty way more approachable and easier to digest?
Like, just remembering, like, always coming back to like the point of like, most coffee consumers don't know coffee comes from a cherry. I think that was like from like my chat with Mokhtar. Mm-hmm. Like, he was just like, I traveled and like talked about my book and did all of these things, and like most people still don't know it's a cherry, and that like stuck with me. That's one thing. I think just being really open and nice, and you know, having in listening well, it's a skill that it's hard now because we're all so fast paced. We want to go, go, go. We want to get to the next drink, or, you know, get to the next person in line. But like, if they're having trouble, like, you know, navigating the menu, or they don't even know where to start, like asking them a couple simple questions will help. Like, do you want it hot? Do you want it cold? Do you like milk? Do you not like milk? And then going that direction is helpful. I think, and then just, I don't know how you can do it, but like the menu with like a lot of foreign words, like if you can make that a bit more approachable, and that goes to like the bag label too of coffee. You know, some people go very specific and will like list the altitude and the type of, you know, anaerobic style and all of that, which is, it's fine. But you know, most of the consumers, like I it's a very divisive thing, but like I like flavors because it helps me go, oh, maybe I find these, maybe I don't. Some people are just like, let's make it really simple. Mm-hmm. And then do like experiences. I know there was a coffee shop in Antigua, in Guatemala, that I brought some coffee home, and they're like, tasting notes was like, it tastes like Christmas spices. And I was just like, that's so spot on, because it was like warm in this Christmassy way. And it, like, they could have been really specific and said like nutmeg or, you know, one of those things. But I think those are nice approachable ways where you're not like very specific, like, oh, this is like a kumquat, and like, what the heck is that? And you know, you're in a way where you're just like, oh, you know, like meeting people where they are, not where they should be.
Enjoying this episode of the Coffee and Technology Podcast? This podcast would not be possible without the support of Cropster. Whether it's tracking harvest yields, roastery and inventory management, or simply tracking brew recipes, Cropster Origin, Cropster Roast, and Cropster Cafe can help you streamline your workflows and help you operate more efficiently.
So, Matthew, as you kind of mentioned a little bit, this is not your day job. So this is not how you live. This is your passion, and you kind of became this coffee influencer. How do you see yourself on that landscape? Is there, there's James Hoffman out there. Like, he's the big name, and he's a professional. He's also an influencer in a way, and in producing all those all that content. Do you see a lot of more people out there doing that? How do you get to that status?
Yeah, I don't think I'm an influencer, but like I get it, because like people will come
because
up
of
to
your
me
age
and go like, oh my gosh, yeah, it's true.
I had that star-studded moment.
it's fascinating. I think it's something that like I'm very like localized. So as like Nick said, like, you know, it's within Southern California, like San Diego County, LA County, and maybe like some of Northern California, like they're like, oh, like I've seen you, or are you that coffee guy? Like in farmers markets in Long Beach, people will like pull me aside and be like, hey, I have this French press, can you give me a recipe? And I'm like, oh yeah. And but it's not something like I went out to become. It was just like a passion project, and like you said, like this is not my day job, but like it's like where I think I find a lot of joy, where, you know, I've had opportunities, and there's like also things where like getting in the coffee industry sounds like a great idea, but like I think overall I still have a worry that like I don't want to like change the playground, but I think there's different ways for me to still find joy and play where you know, it crosses over. But I think overall I don't know, like influencers give me bad vibes. Like, it's just like, I'm sure James Hoffman and like, you know, I know like Michelle, the chocolate barista, and all mm-hmm. she's super nice. And like people are really nice, but like sometimes influencers, you know, will try to use their stuff to get free stuff. And like, I've always try to like, you know, I'll go and I'll like feature people that like I'm stoked about. Like I was drinking Dune Coffee and Makina mm-hmm. and like I buy all of that. So and that's the one thing I do like about James Hoffman. He's mm-hmm. just like he has his side stuff and he like purchases everything. So it's like a unbiased opinion. But I think it's always nice when you meet people and they're like, oh, I know you from the internet. I'm like, oh, that's so nice. Like, and I get to like be a judge at a latte art competition, which is always fun.
So how do you, I mean, what does it mean? So like to you, what does it mean to be somewhat of a, I'm just going to call you a local influencer because that's who you are to me. Yeah. What does it mean to be cool. like a local influencer? I mean, what kind of like responsibility does that hold and how do you, like, how do you manage or maneuver that? In a way, that makes sense.
Yeah, I think actually, Norbert, you asked a question on like, how do you navigate these like tough conversations? And like, we in the US, we went through like a very divisive time of politics with the last presidential election. And, you know, maneuvering like as like someone that, you know, people listen to, I think those two things come hand in hand and it's very difficult. Like most of the time I won't, if I don't have skin in the game, like I won't speak about a subject that like I don't have, you know, a very obvious position or I don't have, you know, enough experience to give like a thoughtful answer. So a lot of it for me has been like, you know, being quiet. And I know like people roast people for being quiet, you know, like it's either like you're gonna get canceled for this or you're gonna get canceled for that. But I think for me it's like, okay, you know, I believe that like, you know, Black Lives Matter and like I believe that like people should be equal. So like I'm okay with stepping into that and being like a person of color and going into that. And but you know, where it's people that like want to nitpick on like little things, they'll try to like bring me into, you know, union stuff and beefs with their boss. And like for me, like that's not my place because I don't know both sides of the story. And I'll like kindly say, hey, like I don't have enough information. Like I'm, you know, a platform here first and foremost to educate consumers. And I'm not gonna take a stance on this. And like most of the time people are okay with that. Or they'll just like block me, which is fine. But I think for me, it's like, you know, what's gonna push forward the community on the consumer side and like, you know, what needs to be noticed. And it's hard at times because, you know, everything is, it gets magnified, especially in the US where I didn't see it as much until I started working for a European company. And then hearing their experience and then knowing our country's experience, you see how like there's landmines everywhere and you just have to navigate it in a way that's a bit different.
I'll give you two of those landmines, the M and the S word, milk and sugar and specialty coffee. So
yeah,
how does that go together?
Big ones.
How's it go together?
I always respect milk and sugar. Like when I'm in Colombia, they love their Nescafe instant coffee. So, you know, or on the streets, you know, they'll have tinto. And I'll get milk and sugar because that stuff is like, it's like diner coffee, right? So I think the coffee industry, like the secret is everyone loves diner coffee because it's like this special thing. But like, we all put milk and sugar and dye in our coffee. So I put milk and sugar in my tinto in Colombia. Didn't you just go to Colombia, Nick?
I'm gonna go again. But it's funny you say that because thinking about that actually the other day, and it's kind of true. Like, I mean, even in my tinto, I don't put milk and sugar, but I end up drinking less coffee in Colombia than I would in the States, because like I just would sometimes rather not have the street coffee. And and that's just me, but that's just me, you know. But I totally get what you're saying. Yeah,
it was like such a I realized it was all the same, but like coffee at any time in the night, like we were at like a bar or a throw ha, like I was just like, there's coffee, like I'm gonna go get a coffee, you guys are drinking, I just want like 24 hour coffee, that sounds terrific.
Oh man, it's funny.
I love it. Yeah.
Okay, so one thing that, you know, going back to what Norbert was saying earlier about, you know, that the Long Beach Coffee Club is kind of like a passion project for you and whatnot. We are a little curious, and I would love to hear a little bit more about what you do on a daily basis, because I do feel like what you do is obviously super applicable to coffee. So a lot of people in coffee that can learn about what you do in a different industry. And I just, you know, it's obviously fascinating as well. Yeah. If you don't mind maybe telling us a little bit about that as well.
Yeah. So my day job, I started about 10 years ago, is digital marketing. So I started just working for tech companies, and the last company I worked for is just like centered around, like, it's a startup, it's consumer electronics, and it's based in Denmark, and then we have an office here in the States. But yeah, it's all digital marketing. So it's Google Ads, Business Manager, which is like how you navigate Facebook, Instagram, Amazon, and then like even like testing different channels like Spotify and Twitter and TikTok and things along those lines. But essentially, the simplest way to explain it, it's you're purchasing ad space in different places on social media or search engines, and you're looking at things based on return. So if I put $1 in and I sell a good that's $20, and it takes like five of those clicks to get there, you know, what's my conversion rate, and like all of those like data points. So so that's a little bit like, that's a very top level, but it's essentially like, especially with the company that's like a speaker company, it's like weaving together like a story with like different parts of the funnel.
I think that links a little bit over to what we what we want to know for the coffee industry, because we do that as a company too, right? And Nick is part of the team, of course, and they're just it's a massive effort, to be honest. And I grew up in a time where this was not existent, like at all. There was no internet until I was 15 years old, or virtually not accessible. Now, there's a lot of companies out there who are like artisans in their craft. They have their coffee shop, they have their roastery. How can they access those things easier? Or is there some learning there you would want to share? Or is it just go on Facebook and do your thing?
No, definitely not, because you can lose a lot of money. There's like two avenues you can always do, right? There's like the organic approach, which is like content specific, writing things, creating podcasts, doing social media posts, all of that. And I think the coffee industry does a really good job on that front. I would say like, if I was just starting a brand in coffee, I would start there, have a good foundation, get your learnings in. And then by learnings, I just mean like, who are you targeting? You know, if you're a coffee shop in Portland and you serve only cold brew, then maybe it's like a certain type of customer that you're targeting. But you know, where like money comes in and like the paid ads or performance marketing, that's where, you know, you can get those learnings in, but you're going to need a budget around it. There's different marketing platforms for different use cases. So, you know, for coffee, let's just like use like a roaster, for example, you know, the place that you'll get the most return the quickest is probably search, which is like Google search, because like it's all intent based. So you type in a query or a keyword into Google, and if some like a customer is looking for specialty coffee, then you know that they're in market for that. So that's like the easiest use case, because you know, you just have to win them over by like using ad copy and then your landing page and make sure like you can ship it there in a reasonable time and they'll connect with that. Where it gets tricky and is like where like there's like social and that side, because like that's all based off of audiences. So let's say this coffee shop that only use like sells cold brew in Portland, really wants to go after college students that love soccer. So, you know, you can target that audience, but like how you got there, and if you don't know your target audience, you need to find that out. And that's where like you have to have some budget for it. So I would say the easiest place to start, and I think where everything is built off of in digital marketing, is Google search, because Google AdWords, and now it's called Google Ads, is a place where you can go and log in and then create the ads for different aspects of your marketing. But it's usually a good place to start, because you'll start understanding, okay, you know, what do you need for search ads? You need ad copy, you need keywords, you need negative keywords, you need a landing page or somewhere, a website to send them to. And then there's this whole auction and like, how does the auction work? But then you can take those learnings and go to YouTube, or you can go to display, or you can go to Google Shopping, or, you know, Instagram or TikTok. But then once you start going to, you know, the social side, you need content. Mm-hmm. So that's where it gets tricky, and like you can get up and running with just keywords in your website. So I would say I would start there, but I would say like with caution, search is one of the more expensive channels, because Google knows that these people are going to convert at a highly, I like at a good rate, and you're auctioning and you're trying to buy these keywords against other competitors. So that's a lot.
No, it's all good though. One thing I'm especially curious about is, you know, a lot of Latin Americans, for example, in producing countries, they're, you know, extremely active on social media, very active on Instagram, maybe not so active on like the Google side and whatnot. But one thing I guess I would be curious, and maybe the listeners who do listen to this on in Latin America and producing countries in general, is what are some, I guess tips that can help take that activeness on social media to another level to reach more buyers? And I guess now with social media, I know what's really common is like producers are now able to reach consumers with that kind of content. So like, what's like the level or the balance to like take their platforms to a new level digitally, and not just connect with buyers, but also start to connect with consumers and really reach more of the end of the supply chain?
Yeah, I really think like using like an Instagram or a Facebook to connect to people already in the community, and doing like you know, a partnership there or an Instagram live or just something basic, right? Because like you tap into the people that you're connecting with's community as well. So, you know, if you're in, you know, Guatemala and you want to connect to more roasters, right? Then probably connecting with where roasters are, or, you know, their, you know, what they're consuming. And I will say probably most roasters are consuming memes. So like maybe connecting with like a cool roast curves or like something that's like that, you know, you got to be careful there. Cause then there's like the real ironic people. So there's like some navigating there, but I think like, okay, like how can you then, you know, tap into their network in an ethical way and say like, hey, like just be transparent and this is what you're going for. I don't know. I think there's like other consumer communities like Long Beach Coffee Club. I know there was one in New York and I want to say Seattle, but like they're all based on like mostly on Meetup or they have an Instagram handle. So they just like reach out, like consumers want to learn more. And like at Origin, there's so many stories you can tell. And I would just start out like with the basics and then start talking about, you know, maybe a little bit more complex, but I don't think like consumers really want to know, like, you know, honey process versus natural versus wash and going really deep. That would be better probably for roasters or like business owners, but like knowing your audience there and like curating the content for that. And yeah, I think like I always, like the only way I got to know the community is to really start going to events. So like, if that's not possible, then trying to do virtual events or going to things and meeting people through that. And that's why I think like the trade shows and all of that stuff is so crucial, because you really start meeting people. And like, once you can see somebody face to face, that's like such a different level of relationships and intimacy of like, oh, you're like a human, you're just like me. And we have a common bond. So that's always like first, but like, if you want to try to do it remotely, you know, the pandemic has showed us a lot of different opportunities there. And probably the simplest one is just like do a live, because, you know, having a conversation and teaching something, or, you know, just saying like how things are going at the farm, or, you know, the next crop is coming in at this time is nice.
It's huge. I did some research on that. Almost 20 years ago on that, how to communicate between different cultures and countries. And it's quite complex. I think the first big firm who did the study was IBM, because they had offices all around the world. And so they actually defined what the driving factors are in terms of how to present information to different people. I feel it's breaking down a little bit now in a good way. So because of what Instagram is doing, so everybody can imitate easier what's maybe standard or what people want to know. And you have a little bit more direct representation, as you say, when just film yourself on the farm or in the coffee fields. It might not be to everybody's liking that not everything is pretty and everything is polished and everything is perfect, because ultimately it's a farm. And even in the US, I don't know how many people have been at a farm or know how farm life actually is. I grew up in a farming community in Austria, so it's, that part was always a little bit known to me. And that's, you know, there's smells and there's dirt and there's a certain realness.
You're grounded.
Yeah,
pretty much.
Nice. No, Matthew, such a fascinating perspective, man. You know, like Norbert said earlier, this is the first we've had on the consumer perspective on the podcast, and it takes my approach to a different level, my understanding to a different level. So really, thank you again for sharing. For sharing your perspective and for your time. Thank you.
Yeah, no, thank you so much. Thank you for having me.
I just loved your insights on the barista, what you just said, just be a decent person, talk to someone else. And it goes such a long way. And that's not only true in coffee, that's true, I think, universally in any job. And I would say that is my big takeaway from today. Just that makes all the difference, right? And the reason you got into it. The effects, you should not underestimate how important a 20 second conversation can be. So thank you for that massive insight.
Amazing. Yeah, no, I think the kindness piece is like something that I always go back to. Like, I'll have phenomenal coffees and but like I'll always remember, you know, just the simple smile or like the kindness. And I think like the day and age, like we're all in meetings virtually most of the time, and we don't get a lot of FaceTime even in this like post COVID world, if there ever is a post COVID world. But like I think like there's such a essential piece and like a part of like the our society's fabric that is, you know, that communication point. So I appreciate it. And yeah, thanks for having me. And I can't wait. I was listening to the episode with Henry from PSG, I think. It was, it's great. So continue doing what you guys are doing. Huge fan.
Thank you, man.
Thank you so much.
We hope you enjoyed this episode of the Coffee and Technology Podcast. To learn more about Cropster, subscribe to this podcast and follow us on social media. For more educational content, visit cropster.com/learn.